As Oliver gave the first testimony of the free and proper action of his lungs, the patchwork coverlet, which was carelessly flung over the iron bedstead, rustled. The pale face of a young female was raised feebly from the pillow, and a faint voice imperfectly articulated the words, "You see the child die." The surgeon had been sitting with his face turned toward the fire, giving the palms of his hands a warm and a rub alternately. But as the young woman spoke, he rose and, advancing to the bed's head, said with more kindness than might have been expected of him, "Oh, you mustn't talk about dying yet." "Lord bless her, dear heart, no," interposed the nurse, hastily depositing in her pocket a green glass bottle, the contents of which she had been tasting in a corner with evident satisfaction. "Lord bless her, dear heart. When she has lived as long as I have, sir, and had 13 children of her own, and all of them dead except two, and them in the workhouse with me, she'll know better than to take on in that way. Bless her, dear heart. Think what it is to be a mother. There's a dear young lamb do." Apparently, this consolatory perspective of a mother's prospects failed in producing its due effect. The patient shook her head and stretched out her hand toward the child. The surgeon deposited it in her arms. She imprinted her cold white lips passionately on its forehead, passed her hands over her face, gazed wildly around, shuddered, fell back, and died. They chafed her breast, hands, and temples, but the blood had frozen forever. They talked of hope and comfort. They had been strangers too long.
"It's all over, Miss Thingamy," said the surgeon at last.
"Oh, poor dear, so it is," said the nurse,
picking up the cork of the green bottle which had fallen out on the pillow as she stooped to take up the child.
"Poor dear."
"You needn't mind sending up to me if the child cries, nurse," said the surgeon, putting on his gloves with great deliberation. "It's very likely it will be troublesome. Give it a little gruel if it is."
He put on his hat and, pausing by the bedside on his way to the door, added,
"She was a good-looking girl, too. Where did she come from?"
"She was brought here last night," replied the old woman, "by the overseer's order. She was found lying in the street. She had walked some distance, for her shoes were worn to pieces. But where she came from, or where she was going to, nobody knows."
The surgeon leant over the body and raised the left hand.
"The old story," he said, shaking his head. "No wedding ring, I see. Ah, good night."
The medical gentleman walked away to dinner, and the nurse, having once more applied herself to the green bottle, sat down on a low chair before the fire and proceeded to dress the infant. And what an excellent example of the power of dress young Oliver Twist was. Wrapped in the blanket which had hitherto formed his only covering, he might have been the child of a nobleman or a beggar. It would have been hard for the haughtiest stranger to have fixed his station in society. But now he was enveloped in the old calico robes that had grown yellow in the same service. He was badged and ticketed, and fell into his place at once, a parish child, the orphan of a workhouse, the humble, half-starved drudge, to be cuffed and buffeted through the world and despised by all and pitied by none. Oliver cried lustily. If he could have known that he was an orphan, left to the tender mercies of church wardens and overseers, perhaps he would have cried the louder.